Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, here we go. So diving into another PT pearl, and today we're going to be talking about the hips. Talking about snapping hip. I know a lot of people, when they're doing ab exercises or if you're running, you might get these snaps and pops in the front side of your hips. And we're going to kind of dig into that a little bit today.
Yeah, exactly. This was such a popular one. Me being a Pilates instructor, for anyone who didn't know, I taught that for 6 years. This was one of the number one complaints, especially think of things like mountain climbers. So when you're on your hands and you're pulling your knees in and out, anything that was basically on the back. So any supine type ab exercise where you're like in tabletop position and then extending the legs out and in, a lot of snapping hips would happen there. And so it was a very popular thing. Anytime I post on social media, it's one of the common questions that I get asked. So we definitely wanted to kind of break it down for you guys today.
Well, yeah. And a lot of people will, I think, be okay with the snapping and popping, at least for a while, or initially they'll be concerned, but then they'll be like, oh, it's not painful, so whatever, I'll just keep doing it. Oh, and I'm getting stronger and I can do more complicated ab exercises, so it's okay, I must be doing it all right. And I think that's one of the challenges we run into with this snapping hip too, because I, you know, experienced this a lot, and I was a really like high level, you know, athlete in college and stuff. And I think a lot of it is it's not that you're not strong. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of the times it's never that we're not really strong. It has to do more with the coordination and the support and the balance of that strength. And so we're going to dive in a little bit more to that later on. But exactly. I think first we want to dice into the next thing we generally hear when we're talking about snapping hip, and we'll hear it referred to as external or internal snapping hip, right?
Yeah. And when we say snapping hip, in case you're not as familiar, just think of that pop sound. It's usually when the knee is coming up toward the chest or
going back down from flexed forward.
Yep.
Especially if you're laying on your back and you go to sit up really quick and you get a little pop in the front of your hip or something like that. That's generally where you might be like, oh, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Technically, I mean, you can look in so many different places, right? There's some people that say we have three different types of snapping hip syndrome. We have internal, external, and intra-articular.
Yeah.
And really, it doesn't matter, as we don't want to get like stuck in the weeds talking and arguing what is correct and what is not. Basically, what we just want to tell you is there's different types, and go over some of the different types that are involved with it. And again, we're not going to be able to diagnose you from this podcast, right? But just giving you an over broader view of what it could be, and even some differential diagnoses that could go along with that.
Yeah, a lot of people like to always classify things in like this or that. And when we talk about a joint, and oh, is it intra-articular or inside the joint? Or is it extra articular? Like that even has different layers to it. Exactly what level this is happening at, what the structure is. And when we're looking into the research, they said a lot of people would come in and say we're talking about more of an internal snapping hip, or that's what it was described by, like first upon the physical examination. They said, oh, you have an internal snapping hip. They said at least 50% of those people, once they dug into it a little more, maybe did some imaging, other testing, would get a different diagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we're going to talk about some of these differential diagnoses, but they would maybe get something like iliopsoas tendonitis, right? And then that, again, is just more so defining the structure that might be involved, might be something that's causing the snapping sound or feeling. And now, oh, it's also irritated and we have this tendonitis.
Right. So basically, what could be happening when you're having snapping hip is that we could be having the iliotibial band, which better known by everyone is the IT band.
Yeah.
And this could be snapping on the hip. Okay. And then we also have the iliopsoas, which is your hip flexor. So think of the hip flexor muscle. It's actually two different muscles, but we'll call it the iliopsoas. That's your main hip flexor, how those muscles kind of act together. And that could be snapping over areas. not getting too super specific here because, again, it's just in this hip area. We got some bony areas. We got some tendons that kind of rub and can snap in different areas. When we, in our mind, think of, I'm going to activate first from my hip flexor in order to create hip flexion and bring my knee toward my chest, rather than coordinating with all the other lovely muscles and core functions that have to do with it. And that's where your brain says, oh, this tendon is going to turn on and it snaps over the bone. And this is also why you might not have pain with it.
Totally. And again, those next level diagnoses that we get or those next level structures that we look at just further defines the symptom and the structure, which mm-hmm. we talk a lot about, that's not the end game.
Right.
The next question is why? Okay, why are we overusing that? Why is that thing clunking in that weird way when I do that certain movement?
Well, what is the other ones that could be involved?
So if we're talking different like internal diagnoses, that's where we'll go back to, we even did an episode on FAI.
Yeah.
Right? Or our internal structure. And FAI, we're talking that all the way down to the bone, where the bone is getting too much pressure in certain areas and starting to develop these different growths, you know, or we could look at the different cartilages. You know, you have the chondral cartilage, which is a cartilage that covers the bone, or the articular cartilage. There's just all these different levels and layers within the joint itself mm-hmm. that we could be having a little growth on the cartilage because too much pressure. And our body says, oh, we need more cartilage there. And it just starts building after a long time. If we have too much building, too much growth, that's what causes this long-term diagnosis or long-term dysfunction. But not to say that we can't start to optimize that still.
Yeah. And so what you can get, you can still hear like a snapping and a popping mm-hmm. deeper inside that joint. So it might not be the IT, it might not be the hip flexor, it might be deeper inside the joint. And it's kind of rubbing on like the labral yeah. issues or some of those other structures.
Definitely
that
labral. I don't think I said labral issues, but
yeah,
it is. That's the next level diagnosis that once we look in more, they might define one of those structures as being like, oh, this is why you're getting that.
Exactly.
Snapping.
So if you do feel like it's a little bit like deeper, like it's not something that it's hard to really define the two if you're having them like yeah. a little bit extra. It's not like you're going to literally feel a tendon snapping over something. You're going to totally. More so just hear the snap pop and maybe feel a little bit of the discomfort. So yeah. when we're talking about these things that you're feeling, could it be deeper inside the hip? Possibly. Could it be more extra? Like it just, I think when you start to listen to the whole thing and just start to observe everything we're going to talk into as to the why,
yeah.
then you just start to overall kind of address the entire issue from a broader standpoint.
Totally. Because like we said, I think it was 5 to 10%. That was the number I saw on one study online of people might experience this snapping hip to some degree. But right after that, it says to a large degree of them are asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. A large number of them are just asymptomatic popping. And that's the only symptom.
Yeah.
And so again, the question becomes, okay, why is that happening? Is it something that might be overuse if I do mm-hmm. on a chronic level? And how can we start to approach balancing that differently in our body?
Yeah.
And then again, when it comes to the internal snapping hip, understanding that could be a whole number of different things. And those are ones that might have different approaches depending on what is specifically happening in your body.
Yeah. So listening to that FAI one could help to just start
For
to
sure.
Understand a little bit deeper inside the hip joint itself. And yeah. if that's something that you need to start to understand or look at deeper for you. So that's where I would say with that. But then where we go, you know, if we continue to just say, oh, I have no pain with it, it's fine, I'm just going to let this continue on, I'm just going to get stronger and do more advanced type techniques like mm-hmm. Dom was talking about, what could end up happening down the road is we do have these like bursa sacs that kind of almost like cushion what's happening between tendons, ligaments, and the bones, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we continue to have this snapping back and forth of the tendon over the bone, it could eventually start to irritate the bursa sacs around the hip joint and around those tendon areas, and it could turn into hip bursitis. So this is something yeah. that, yes, you might not be having pain right now. Could you have pain down the road? Possibly. We're not saying it's definite, but it's just something that could end up happening down the road.
And that's the same you know, with the tendonitis is like, if it is like a different tendon, and then we do that over time, and then it starts to irritate or become too much, or we get to too high a level, and that's when that tendon starts talking to us. That's when we can develop these tendonitises, tendinosises, and things on down the road.
Yep.
And, you know, the message is here kind of like, let's start tuning in, let's start listening to that. And even come back around to like when I do my own core exercises, because I am somebody who, if I would go into like a full pike position or try to do a hollow body, I would get a couple clunks in my hips. Mm. And when I go back to the really simple, simple core exercises, like in the abdominal body, the core one, the simplest little core exercises, that's when I feel it the most. And you can really feel that deep burn of really finding that anterior support or the support in the front of your core, the low front of your core, so that you can support those hips in their movement.
Exactly. And it's so funny because it's like, it's the basic stuff, but it's really not.
No, it's hard as heck.
When you start to like program everything and actually go down to relearning how to move within this core, it becomes really difficult. So,
well, we were talking beforehand about how it, as you do it, it becomes more of a motor patterning thing.
Yeah.
And as we do it over time, we just start develop these motor patterns where it's like, okay, I'm going to lift my hip up. Our body immediately activates and drives through maybe that hip flexor, the iliopsoas, the quad tendon, whatever it is that is just driving that anterior hip pressure. And our body just now has this programmed in that when we raise our hips, that's how we operate.
Exactly.
And it's similar to like, okay, let's go walk through the door and then open it.
Mm-hmm.
No, we just need to learn how to coordinate those differently. We don't just need to walk at the door harder and faster.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, it's interesting to have to take a step back and say, okay, it's okay for me to come back to this foundational level, relearn, right? And and that's where a lot of the resistance, I think, is. But I can do the super hard ab stuff. I could do total bar. I could do all these things. And having to say, yes, you can, and let's take a step back and just start to relearn some of the foundational basics before we hop through the door again and run face into it. You know, and a lot of times when we're talking about this and you're thinking, oh, well, if I'm just overusing my psoas, if I'm just overusing my hip flexor, well, then I just need to smash it out. I need to get in there and dig because it's obviously too tight, and that's why it's working on overload, and I need to give my other muscles a chance. So I'm just going to smash into it. And that's where I think that mindset sometimes comes from of like, it's too tight. Let me smash it in. Let me dig it in. If we do turn down the tone of that muscle by applying pressure, which is what we could do.
Totally.
Is that going to really create change in the movement?
Yeah. And even then, when we do use some of these quick fixes or quick releases to gain some of that pliability and understanding of how we can move those hip muscles better, how do we connect it to the movement?
Exactly.
And does smashing anything out make a benefit unless we're kind of learning how to connect it into that coordinated movement? And that's where I really think it's valuable to come around to the breath, because with the breath, we find that proximal stability. And then when we program that in and program that pillar of stability from our rib cage to our pelvis, then when we start to move our hips without compromising that, we can move a little more freely and we allow a little more of that space. So that's where this is where we always come back around to. But some of those basic core exercises, programming that in for a while and then just starting to do basic arm or leg movements, like just basic heel taps on a chair or something. So you're not even fully extending your leg. You're not even doing anything to that extent, but you're breathing, maintaining that proximal stability and kicking your legs out. And guys, like in my podcast I put out, I talked a lot about my core, my pelvic floor coordination issues. And that's why I benefit so much from core one and the simplest of the core exercises, because it's that programming that my body just craves the most.
Exactly. Your body is really good at compensating. Like really good at compensating, especially if, like, I will call myself out, former gymnast, dancers, we create such complicated, huge movements, and then we teach our body how to create that when we might not have the true stability or awareness into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become experts at covering up some of these compensations and just making it look effortless, even though it's really not. And so relearning, like, where am I compensating in the body? And that's why we come back to the breath, because if we think about what the breath is actually doing, we think, you know, your diaphragm driving how we breathe in and out. But if your diaphragm is moving down and up, what also has to happen is there's going to be different pressures that push down on the pelvic floor, that push out through the back, and that push out through the stomach and around that whole pelvis region where all your muscles and tendons kind of connect into. So then if I'm saying, okay, now if I'm going to start to address the way I breathe with my movement, which, by the way, if you're not breathing with movement, you don't actually own that movement owns you. Mm-hmm. I'll just throw that out there and we'll continue to say that forever, I think. So if I can start to become aware of how my pelvis is working with my diaphragm and my breath, how this intra-abdominal pressure systems are working and how my muscles are coordinating with that, and then I start to use my hip flexor with it, then mm-hmm. I start to use my IT band, then I start to pull in all these big levers and big movers with this foundation, that's when I can start to really progress things to a much higher mm-hmm. levels in a more efficient and not compensated way.
I love how you say that. Like, if you can't breathe in the movement owns you.
Yeah.
You're being owned by the movement, which is kind of like nervous system wise. If you're not breathing, you're in your fight and flight.
Yeah.
And that means you're scared to heck by whatever's going on. And so that's why when you think about core exercises or ab exercises, usually people feel these things during like mountain climbers or bear crawls or, mm-hmm. or things like that. And it's like, so can you assume all of those positions in a stable position with breath?
Yep.
So just get into a plank and work on holding and breathing in a plank for 30 seconds. And if that's difficult, 30 seconds of mountain climbers is a task.
Yeah.
And then if you get good at doing a plank on both legs, get into a plank with just one leg up. Because when we're doing mountain climbers, we have a leg off the ground. Mm-hmm. Can your body assume a one-legged full body plank for 30 seconds whilst breathing and maintaining that stability and safety? And if that's tough, 30 seconds of mountain climbers might also be tough.
Exactly. And then when we flip it around, right, and we're on our back, I think we have to address that too. Because I remember when I was teaching anatomy for a yoga teacher training, and one of the instructors, very strong, very good at his yoga practice, but he had snapping hip syndrome, and he would do a lot of the supine, so laying on his back core exercises, and he could do them very advanced. But when I said, okay, I see that you can do this and your hip snaps every single time. Now, what if we changed it? Rather than having all the pressure just come up vertically, meaning all the way up into his rectus abdominis, this is the muscle from that's connecting underneath that rib cage all the way down to the base
pack.
Of the six pack. Thank you. Easier way to kind of explain that. But if we're overutilizing that guy and then not utilizing all of the other lovely muscles and pressure systems from the pelvic floor to the transverse mm-hmm. abdominis to your obliques to, you know, then the hip flexors, then we're not, you're going to overutilize some things. And so he was. And when we got him back to the, like a little bit more to the basics, it would turn off. And then he's like, yeah, but then I go right back here and it's back on. And I said, right, because your body's not ready for that yet. Now you have mm-hmm. to go come back and then reteach your body how to move with all of these different areas. And so that's why when we talk about this supine or on your back kind of ab exercises, it is like, can you lay down and have bend your knees and have your feet flat and then just be lifting one leg at a time? And can you do that without any snapping? Now, can you lift mm-hmm. both legs and just tap your feet down with bent legs and without any snapping? Mm-hmm. Then you would progress to extending the legs. And when we extend the legs, we extend the lever. And so that makes a lot of those muscles around that pelvis and core have to work a lot harder. So these are just some basic progressions to start to see, because I have worked with not only him, but other amazing, incredible movers who are just doing things at a level that their body is telling them, I'm not quite ready for this yet.
Absolutely. And it is, as a good mover, I don't know if I'm included in that, but I was an athlete. And so as somebody who views yourself as a good mover, the toughest thing to admit to ourselves is that we need to pedal back and work on basics and foundations. And that's where it's just like, okay, I can do this little exercise, or I can do this and I can just deal with a little bit of the popping, and that's okay, and it looks better, and it looks like I'm doing something really hard.
Yeah.
And that can be tempting, but you can always come back to the basic. And something I'll hear often is that, oh, that's too easy for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'll get popping when I'll do the other things, but that's too easy for me. And that's where I say, okay, now this is where you really get to focus and hone in, because if it's too easy for you, you have the control over creating more pressure in your abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
You have the control over making those things work harder, whether you're just sitting there, whether you're laying on your back. You don't need weight. You don't need the legs to be the lever. You can create better, more pressure in your abdomen. So even if you're just laying on your back with your knees up, you can learn how to create more of that pressure and engage more and still continue to breathe, and then start to do little heel taps. And you'll notice that just by focusing more, you can make the exercise harder. Exactly. And more concentrated.
And sometimes we have to also think the isometrics, so like the holding of something, we should own with the breath as well before we start moving. So you don't have to have these legs go in all these mm-hmm. different positions. Like, what if instead of just doing mountain climbers, you came and, like Dom said, with one leg, but you moved it in, or you held it in different positions and you breathe yeah. with this knee coming toward your chest. Oh, I feel like it's going to pop, so I'm going to hold it right there and breathe. And see if I can create something different. Like these, we take for granted the value of holds and breathing mm-hmm. rather than we think everything has to be faster and move it more. if you pull it back and you just start holding and breathing, you can, I promise you, feel so much different. And that's why also it's like I urge people so much, like, get into the optimal body, the challenge, is something so that you can start to learn and understand these cues on such a deeper way in the body.
Yeah, I often kind of joke with myself that when people go too fast, we cover up our inefficiencies and we're really just throwing our bony structure and our tissues, you know, from one point to another and throwing ourselves between our tissue tension and between our bony structures. And that's going to catch up to us eventually. When you're a young, healthy, able mover, you can do that often. Even as we age, it's only going to catch up to us once we do it too much and aren't aware of what's going on in our body.
Exactly. So hopefully this helped you to think of things a little bit differently and start to be open to exploring, pulling it back, coming down to your foundation, and definitely, like, hop in, just start learning in the program. Thank you again for joining us on yet another PT Pearl. We just appreciate you so much. And of course, if you need more visuals for each PT Pearl, they are over at Doc Gen Fit on YouTube. There is a whole section for the PT Pearls from the Optimal Body Podcast that you can use to really see what we're talking about. And don't forget, if you really like this, if you're learning from it, share it out, share it with your community. Tell us what you're learning. Rate and subscribe to the episode, because there's going to be so many more goodies and PT Pearls along the way. And if you're ready to dive in even deeper, don't forget, we have an Optimal Body membership with an incredible community of movers learning with us and moving in their body. Until next time, thank you again.